Blog Talk Radio.
Hour, and I'm your host, Pope Runyon. I hope you all had a good Thanksgiving. We had about 10 people over at Rivendell and Big Turkey, and we had a very good festive occasion. We all kind of agree this is America's best holiday, really. Now, tonight, we're going to describe and explain one of the first rituals that we learn, and yet one of the most important in modern magic. Now, this is the Lesser Pentagram. Now, following this discussion and instruction, we're going to discuss the Church of the Hermetic Sciences Associate Member Program, which we've mentioned before. This is a course that we offer in magic and its related subjects. Now, we'll describe the structure of the program, its requirements, the purpose of it, and the goals that we have, and they'll be outlined. And tell you what you can expect to gain from membership and what we expect of you in return. And this program that we've got here is already underway, and it's growing, and we're launching a new 21st century concept and magical networking. It's a combination of traditional and virtual association. And even if you're not ready to join us yet, you certainly will want to know what we're doing and how we're doing it. So, as I said, tune in and get connected. Okay. We're up and running on the chat room. I think we can take calls if you want to call in. The guest call-in number is area code 347-857-1830. I'll repeat that. Guest call-in number, call in at any time. 347-857-1830. Now, let's get into discussing the pentagram ritual. I think everybody who's had any experience with magic or any or read a magic book or whatever's run into this. I mean, you get it over and over and over again, and it's usually the Golden Dawn version of it. Now, before we start describing it and teaching you how to do it and all of that, let's talk about its origin, what's behind it, how it got started, and how it got developed. This is a fascinating story in itself. The pentagram, the five-pointed star, as you probably already know, it represents the human body, the microcosm, in other words, the human body with the arms. You can think of it as a person with their legs spread apart and their arms extended, and then their head, of course, is up. So this forms an upright five-pointed pentagram star. Now, if it's if it's a pentagon, that's the lines that you would draw from the points of the star to the point of the star to the point of the star all around. That would form a pentagon. And a gon as opposed to a gram. A gram is a figure that is made up of crossing lines from point to point, and the gon is the figure that surrounds the points. We don't find the pentagram. It is a very ancient symbol. In fact, it's true that the planet Venus, if you trace its rising around the seasons at the vernal equinox point, when it rises every 8 years, the planet Venus forms a perfect pentagram around the zodiac. Now, this is something that has to be observed very carefully over a period of time, but yet the ancients knew about this. But it does. Its rising point over an 8-year period forms a perfect pentagram in the circle of the zodiac. That's one aspect of the pentagram. Now, the earliest that I know of where the pentagram shows up in a magical context is in a medieval grimoire called the Heptameron, which is attributed to Peter D'Abano, and probably dates from the 13th century. That's about the earliest time we find it mentioned in a magical text as a symbol used in magic. Now, Agrippa, in the 15th, 16th century. Agrippa, who codified, he and following Abbot Trithemius, the two of them, they got together and they collected all of the medieval texts and they put them all together into Agrippa's three books of occult philosophy, which, you know, is sort of like the Bible of the Western tradition. It's the synthesis of and the rectification of medieval magic. Now, Agrippa describes the pentagram in there. He doesn't show it necessarily, but he describes it as being very effective against evil spirits in magic. And from that, and of course the fact that it was used in the Heptameron, which came along a little before Agrippa. But I'm going to mention it. We don't find it in Picatrix, either the Arab version or the Latin version of Picatrix. We don't, but we do find it in Heptameron, and Agrippa mentions it. Now, following this, we find it in the Key of Solomon, which is a little bit after the Heptameron, probably the first versions of the medieval Key of Solomon probably come up around, 1400, something like that, and all the way up into the 1700s, they were doing various versions of the Key of Solomon. So we find the pentagram, and we even find versions of it with indications by Hebrew letters around the points of what the elements might be attributed to it. Now, so it's in the Key of Solomon, and then, of course, it shows up in the Lamegaton, and it's very prominent in the Lamegaton, and with sigils in it and everything else, and it's obviously it's described in the Lamegaton, the Goetia of the Lamegaton, as being worn on the robe of the Magus and used to control evil spirits. You put it on the back of the lament and you use it to intimidate the spirits. So it certainly figures that. Now, how did our pentagram ritual, however, come about? Well, Eliphas Levy, the very famous, prolific French Magus, around about 1860, he's French, and he wrote several books on magic, probably the best and the most influential one was called Transcendental Magic. And he has a chapter on the pentagram in his book, and he begins to get into extrapolating from Agrippa and the Key of Solomon, and he begins to get into the concept of using the pentagram to control the spirits and Levy. Now, this is an important thing to remember. Eliphas Levy was the first one in the 1860s. He was the first person to suggest that an upside-down pentagram was demonic or satanic. Before that, nobody had really thought too much about a pentagram with a point, you know, pointing downward. They didn't think about that. They were doing it both ways, whatever, it didn't matter. To the point that you wonder why the Order of the Eastern Star in Masonry, the adoptive Order of the Eastern Star, they have an upside-down pentagram. And they say, of course, that, well, it just means that one point is pointing east. But that was, Mackey came up with that, obviously, before he read Levy. Also, you know, gosh, you look at the Congressional Medal of Honor. You've got an upside-down pentagram on that, too. So this idea of the satanic upside-down pentagram was something Levy came up with. Now, remember, Eliphas Levy, and this is something we should all be aware of, he's a lot of fun to read. He is very imaginative, had a tremendous influence on magic, had a tremendous influence on Mathers and on Westcott and on Albert Pike and on Blavatsky. And Eliphas Levy was very influential, but Eliphas Levy jumped to a lot of conclusions and wrote a lot of things as being old traditional that really weren't. They were things that he came up with, like the upside down pentagram. That was one of his extrapolations. Another one of Levy's ideas was that the tarot preceded the Kabbalah, and of course this had an influence on Paul Foster Case, and actually, as I've mentioned before, this kind of threw the Hermetic Kabbalah a little out of kilter. I think personally, the idea that the tarot was actually that the paths of the tree were more important than the spheres. Now that this can be traced directly back to Eliphas Levy. But anyway, Levy had this chapter in Transcendental Magic, and if you happen to have that on your shelf, you know, or whatever, you see it, you can read it. It's very interesting on the pentagram. Now, the cipher manuscript of the Golden Dawn, which I did the most detailed and the most authoritative book on that. Bob Gilbert and I did it, and it's available. It's also available through the Associate Member Program for half price. That's a plug. Anyway, so in the cipher manuscript of the Golden Dawn, in the philosopher's section in there, you will find the pentagram figures and the way you're supposed to do them outlined. And you'll find a particular one showing, a little drawing showing the elements attributed to the points of the pentagram. The spirit wheel up top and air and water and earth and fire on the bottom, you know, at the bottom points, earth and fire at the bottom points, and air and water on the two top arms, and then the spirit on the top. And so you can see from this where this, and the Key of Solomon, of course, where Mathers and Westcott got their idea for creating what we now have, the modern pentagram ritual, and how it should work. Now, what the pentagram ritual does is that it sets portal guards. Now, the Golden Dawn, it didn't use it the way we use it, exactly. They only used a banishing form. There's both an invoking form and a banishing form. They employed this lesser pentagram ritual. And the reason why we call it the lesser pentagram is that it's attributed to the element of earth, which is the final element. You know, air, earth, fire, well, air, water, fire, or fire, air, water, and earth. Earth is the final element. So we call this the lesser pentagram because it's attributed to the element of earth, and there are other pentagrams for the other elements, including spirit, that are referred to as either the greater pentagram rites or, and I think we're getting kind of technical now, the watchtower type opening pentagrams. And these refer to other elements, but the one that they started off with, the one that they used to precede every ritual to clean out and banish all of the spirits that might be hanging around the temple, clean everything out, was the banishing lesser pentagram ritual. And this was what we used to actually set the quarter guards. Because the reason why we do that is because along with envisioning these blazing pentagrams at all four quarters around the temple or around the circle at the four compass quarters. The reason why we do that is we also envision the four major archangels of the elements and of the quarters. These are the quarter guards. Now, if this starts to sound a little bit like Wicca, this is where the Wiccans got the idea for this. And so when you cast a circle, literally, you're casting a circle with this pentagram ritual. You're setting your guards and the angelic guards at the quarters. So we do it in the OTA, we do it invoking, because we want those angels there. We want them there. And if that cleans out that cleans out the temple too, as far as that's concerned, because there nothing bad is gonna want to stay in that circle when those angels are set up around it. So we do an invoking to begin with, and then we do a banishing pentagram after we finish the ceremony. That's our system. Golden Dawn, they just used primarily the banishing method to start off with. Now, the way the pentagram ritual is done, and the most traditional and the most formal way to do it, is to stand in the center of your magic circle, which traditionally is 9 feet in diameter, and you stand in the center of the circle, and you touch your magic sword. In this case, the weapon that you use is the magic sword. Now, the reason why you do this with the magic sword is because the sword is considered the weapon of wisdom, the sword of wisdom, the cutting edge of reason, the weapon of discernment. It's attributed to in our system, by the way, to the Archangel Raphael of the air. And this is one of the very few rituals where you actually use the magical sword, but it's very important. Now, let's describe this ritual right from the Book of Solomon's Magic, which I have right here. And as this ritual with its variations is one of the most important rites you will commit to memory in your magical career. You should employ it every day for inspiration, protection, and personal centering. You can perform it without a sword or gestures, as an internal projection of your imagination, at any time you need protection In its full dress formal application, it is the required circle casting or quarters rite preceding every ritual in nearly all Western magical traditions, and variations of it are even used by Wiccans. The Golden Dawn used it primarily for banishing form to cleanse out the temple before working. We use it in the invoking form to consecrate our magic circle and set the wards of power at the compass quarters. These wards are traditionally the four archangels of the Tetragrammaton. Now, we employ the banishing form at the end of the rite to close and seal the circle of our working. The pentagram ritual is a legacy from the Order of the Golden Dawn. The invoking and banishing pentagram forms were found in the original cipher manuscript, but the concept of the ritual itself must be credited to W. Wint Westcott. Before this elegant rite was conceived, each magician had his own or her own way of casting a circle, often invoking and actually tracing the circle on the floor or the ground. I remember that one. Bam, 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 barrier that none can pass, barrier that not even the gods can know, on and on and on and on and on and on, while you scratch it. And I believe me, when I first got started, I scratched them. I scratched them all the way around. Now, the pentagram ritual is referred to as the lesser pentagram ritual in the Golden Dawn papers because it utilized only the final form attributed to the earth element. The term lesser pentagram ritual is used because the so-called greater pentagram ritual is used to open Enochian tablets and was later incorporated into the Enochian watchtower opening. Now, in our video, that's the Magic of Solomon, we use only the earth element pentagram form as a minimum opening and closing requirement. But the experienced operator can certainly use the other elemental forms as an additional quadrant opening similar to the Enochian Watchtower concept. And if this confuses you, don't worry about it. In activating these pentagram forms on the astral, you invoke toward the point of the element and you banish from the point. Earth is on the lower left point, and hence we are invoking spirit, and that's at the top point, into and banishing it from the element of earth. This is an appropriate opening and closing for all magical operations because it brings spirit into and then releases it from the physical plane or material basis of the work. Now, because these are earth pentagrams, now this is where we're going to get into a little controversy here. Because these are earth pentagrams, they should be visualized in bright neon green. And the words and names of power should be vibrated and projected. Now, before we go any further, let me say this. In almost all Golden Dawn literature or Golden Dawn related literature, you're going to find that these pentagrams are these earth pentagrams in the lesser rite are said to be visualized in blue. Well, now there's a reason for that. And the reason is the best reason, there are several reasons, but there's the best reason for that is that people, magicians, realize that one of the first things you see when you enter the astral plane is a sort of an electric blue. It's kind of a blue halo around things. It's kind of there's a bluish, almost a violet kind of a vibration that you see when you enter the astral plane. So with that in mind, they thought, well, let's do this these pentagrams in this blue color for these people to get started, you know, and don't worry about the elemental pentagrams later. Don't worry about it being a water pentagram because, you know, we won't worry about that now. We'll just have them do this because this is an astral color. That was their reasoning for doing this. The only problem with that is, and there is a big problem with that, and the problem is that you are not scrying the pentagram. You are projecting it. You're creating it. Now, magical color is not what you see, it's what you impose. I mean, this is the whole concept of magical color, the whole concept that the tree of life, all the colors on the tree of life, they're not what you scry on the astral. They're what you impose on the astral in order to create what you're going to create. And so consequently, you really should make these earth pentagrams, bright green. And then, of course, if they want to turn blue, they can, and you can scry them. But you should do this. You make them bright green. And that way, then when you get later on at doing fire pentagrams and water pentagrams and air pentagram, you can do them in the proper colors, and you won't be confused. So, now, how do we do it? Okay, we start off. We're standing in the center of the circle, and we got our sword. And we face east. And we touch. By the way, east is magical east. You don't have to in a temple. If the part of the temple that's supposed to be east isn't exactly east, well, yeah, you can call it magical east. Okay, face east. Touch the right hand with the sword to the forehead. That's the hilt of the sword, and say Atta. And touch the sword pommel to the chest and say, Malkut. Touch the right shoulder and say, Vegadura. And then the left shoulder and say, Vegadula. And extend the sword outward with both hands and say, Leolam. Bring the sword back to the chest saying, Aum. Now this is the Kabbalistic cross, and translated it means, Thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory forever. Amen. Now trace the first earth pentagram in the east with the point of your sword, invoking to begin the rite, of course banishing to close, and thrust the point through the center, vibrating, Amashau. Or, if you want to stay with the 22-letter alphabet, Shamata. Now these are generic tetragrammaton forms, and I think I've described in earlier shows that we don't use in our Hermetic Kabbalah, we don't use YHVH. Because that's proprietary, and that's I told you about the time we had the Hasidic people to one of our ceremonies, and everything was going fine, and we were having a grand time until the deacon got out there and did and the pentagram. They all got up and walked out, and I thought at that time, wait a minute now. No, that's their God, and they think we stole it, so we're not going to use it. So you'll find that even the 22-letter alphabet, Shema'ata, is a very, very effective tetragrammaton. Trust me on that. And if you don't trust me, look at the cube of space, and you'll realize that it is. And, of course, Amashao is the 24-letter alphabet, which means that we added the two letters that the Kabbalah needed in the first place to be able to spread it around the zodiac, and so that's that one. Now, excuse me for that digression, but we needed to get that straight. Now, keeping the sword point extended, do a right-facing movement and trace another pentagram in the south and thrust through the center while vibrating. Adonai. Swing the point to the west and trace another pentagram, thrusting through it with Ah-hi-ya. That really is the name of God. It means I am. Just think about that. I am. Now complete the circle to the north with the final pentagram saying Agila, or if you want to extend it, Thine is the power forever, my Lord. Again, then face the east and extend your arms in the form of a cross, saying, Before me, Raphael. Visualize the archangel towering above the clouds at sunrise with his sword and censer still facing the east. Vibrate behind me, Gabriel. Behind your back, visualize the archangel holding her silver chalice with the moon and the ocean behind her. And then say, at my right hand, Michael. In the south, to your right, visualize the archangel in armor towering above a fiery volcano with his flaming lance. And next say, at my left hand, Uriel. To your left, visualize the archangel with the green hills behind her holding a pentacle heaped high with the fruits of the earth. And then say, around me flame the pentagrams. And again, visualize the green pentagrams at each quarter, east, south, west, and north. And next, vibrate. Above me shines the six-rayed star. Or you can also say, in column shines the six-rayed star. Visualize above your head a universal hexagram in bright yellow gold. Now, this universal hexagram isn't just our idea. Rigardi actually preferred it, and Giordano Bruno came up with it. It's a generic hexagram, and it's better for hermetic magicians. Now, again, perform the Kabbalistic cross to complete the rite. That first variation is the very personal empowerment version, which is always done in invoking mode. It is the same as the one we just did, with the archangels are called, visualized, and following petitions that can be added. This is what you can do when you call the angels up. Raphael, grant me perfect health and wisdom. And then with Michael, you say, Mikhail, grant me creative force and energy. Gabriel, you could say, grant me unlimited love and sensitivity. And Oriel, grant me boundless wealth and prosperity. And then we add the visualization of the Tetragrammaton overhead in colored Phoenician letters starting from right to left. Amashal, saying, great Lord of the universe, grant me freedom and spiritual enlightenment. Now, this is a variation of the pentagram ritual, which you can use every day as a form of enlightenment. The second variation is the protection version. And this is usually done in the invoking mode, but can be done as a banishing in conjunction with other rites. And it's the same as the basic form, except that the archangels are visualized as facing outward in a shielding mode. You're looking at their wings, you know, and they're facing out. Now, the following petitions are made. Raphael, protect me from the perils of wind and plague. Mikhail, protect me from the dangers of fire and fury. Gabriel, protect me from the threat of flood and storm. Uriel, protect me and what is mine from theft, injury, accident, or destruction. And again, visualize Amasha or Shama'ata above and say, Amasha, protect me from above and below and within and without. This last petition is most important, especially if you are defending against magical attack. Black magic uses your own weaknesses against you. There is another version to be mentioned. That this is really not a regular pentagram ritual, but it is a four quarters rite. And it's more of a New Age neo-pagan form is suited to outdoor setting. And it's especially good to use with non-initiates present. And this rite is an invocation and extension of the universal love to unite yourself with nature and humankind, and it should be done in conjunction with the practice of our personal transformation mantra. Through me flows a river of unlimited love. Now you say that 1,000 times every day for a year, and boy, you really will transform yourself. Now, facing east, say, above me, Sun Father, beneath me, Earth Mother, empowered by one, I serve the other, air, earth, fire, water, father, mother, son, daughter, Aum. Raising your hands in the receiving mode, palms up, repeat the transformation mantra 22 times, then look off as far to the east as you can see, and vibrate. I project love to the limits of the East and receive in return a vision of beauty. Wait to absorb the vision, then face south and repeat the formula to the same, to the other quarters, in a deicil round and close with the opening salutation. The basic pentagram ritual should be thoroughly memorized before any of the variations are attempted. Transformation mantra can be used at any time, and it is the subject of a separate paper, and it is only mentioned here in conjunction with the pentagram variation. Now, that gives you a pretty good idea of how this ritual can be used, how it functions, and I personally believe that everyone in magic should use this. You don't have to be that formal about it to stand up and do the whole. You can actually do this sitting down in your imagination. It's not such a good idea to be trying to do it while you're driving a car. I will admit I have, but I have, you know, if you see me driving, you see a black Hummer with four angels flying around it, you know that's me. Anyway, this ritual is just a cornerstone of modern magic. Now, I think you know something about how it got started and what you can do with it. Okay, let's get on into talking about our associate member program. Now, one of the things that we have been experiencing with the associate member program is a lot of enthusiasm for actually learning about the whole magical process. And what we're doing with this is it's a mystery school. We created and we're often actually doing a mystery school, and we're gonna do it over the internet and through email and yet at the same time we're going to have personal contact. This is not something that you can just, this is not a web surfing thing. I mean, this is something that we're really serious about it, and we're setting it up. And what we will do is we will actually get you through all 7 degrees of our system. And that's outer order, inner order, the whole business, in a series of lessons that will be, that are being graded. We've already sent out the first lessons, and we're already grading some. Some of the people have already sent back their examinations, and so far everybody's getting them perfectly. We'll tell you how this works. Like, for instance, the first test we just sent out. The first test, the first essay, or monograph, if you want to call it that, is a 14-page document that describes the first degree initiation, what it does, how it, actually some of the lines that are actually in it. It's not all of it. I mean, obviously there are some things we don't reveal, but it's all the meaning, all the meaningful things in there, the things that we really want you to learn, are all described, and a mystical poem at the beginning that describes the whole history of the Western tradition, all the way from ancient Canaan, all the way up through the Gnostics and through the Kabbalah and through the Renaissance and all the way up to this mystical poem. And we explain the poem, and we explain the various aspects of the initiation. And that's all there in a 14-page document, which we send out to you. But then comes the test and to advance to the next degree. Well, The test is very, very simple. I have to admit that we're basing this on the Scottish Rite Master Craftsman's course. They came up with this idea that is just really a great idea. Nobody people examinations and tests and all that is intimidating, and people go, dark run, I don't want to go back to school. Yeah, however, if you do it this way, it's fun, and it's easy, and it's fun, and yet you do learn the material. Here's how we do it. We go through and take meaningful sentences or meaningful phrases in the lesson in sequence, and then we just have the blanks. We just repeat that sentence that's in there, and then we blank out a couple of significant words in the test, and then we go right in sequence to the next one, the next one, the next one, the next one, till we get about 15 questions. And all you have to do then is read through the lesson, and as you come to that first question, you see there's a couple of blanks, and you see you just fill them in. That's what you got to do. It's real easy. But the great thing about it is that it makes sure, the way it's designed, it makes sure that you understand the material. It's a wonderful learning device. It's not intimidating. It's easy to do, and then you know it, and we know you know it. And I remember, I don't know if you saw this delightful little comedy movie called Mystery Men, but in there, Wes Studi, the great Native American actor, Wes Studi, plays the Sphinx, the guru. And the Sphinx says, "In order to learn the teachings, we must first teach you how to learn." Well, this is what we're doing. This is a great way to teach you how to learn. And one associate member, he got the thing, and I had hardly sent the test out to him before he turned right around and sent it back to me with all the answers already filled in. It didn't take him more than 10 minutes to do it. So it's easy, but, you need to do it. Now, the way we work the associate member program is that what you do is you send us a letter, and you can email it to us, or you can send it to us. But you send us a letter telling us about yourself and why you would like to join our associate member program, and then we will send you an application form, and we'll mail it to you, and we'll mail it to your service mail address. So we want your real name, your service mail address, and we're going to ask you your birth date so we can do a quickie rough and ready horoscope on you, because we don't know about that. And we want to know you're an adult and you're responsible. And then you send us, along with this, when you send the application form back, with a picture of yourself, and we want a $10 check or a money order made out to the Church of the Medic Sciences, and you send that back. Now, providing everything is in order and all that, we send you back a beautiful certificate that you can frame. That's really pretty, and an ID card for the year. And then, but best of all, you get a whole sheet of coupons that enable you to buy all of our videos and our books and journals and everything for actually half price, half of what you would pay if you went and bought them online. And we can do this because the online markup is pretty high. So we can do this. We're not exactly losing money, but we're not making money either. And you get $175 worth of books for less than $50. It's a very good deal. But these books are part of your instruction because, they will be part of yours. Some of the instructions you receive aren't published. Some of them are are not published, but some of them are in the published material. So the idea here is to get you through the first two degrees. That's about 10 lessons, actually, to get you through the first two degrees. And then we're going to see about getting you actually initiated. We got a plan for that. And exactly what the plan is, I'm not going to discuss on the open radio. I will discuss it, of course, with the associate member people. But we got a plan where we're actually going to get you initiated. And this is going to be very good. So you understand, though, that the associate member program, it doesn't mean that you're going to be, you know, automatically initiated through the internet or through the mail. No. Real initiation is going to happen, but it's going to happen down the road when you get, you know, when you get further along in the program. That's what we plan to do. So the ultimate goal of this is of course to establish camps and chapter houses, and then eventually lodges around the country. And this is what we'd like to do. And so we want you guys to join up and get with us on this. And I really enjoy it. So far, the members that are already joined up, they're having a grand time, and they're enjoying it. And you're really going to, as I say, you're going to learn a lot about magic, and you're going to have a lot of fun doing it. One of the things about the OTA that I think you should understand is that we're not down on anybody else's religion. I mean, we consider ourselves to be the philosophy and the creed behind both Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. We're way back there where it got started, before Moses. And, of course, naturally, before Jesus, before Muhammad, all of this originally got started back in Melchizedek's time. And then, by the time we got around to Solomon, 12 indications, Solomon was a worshiper of El and Baal and Astarte and whatever. That was so. This fits very, very well with what became the Kabbalah and became Hermetic magic, and this. But it still retains that original tradition. But there's nothing anti Jewish or anti Christian or anti Muslim about anything that we teach or anything we do. And I want you to really understand that we're not dogmatic. And yet we do have a very beautiful and a very thoroughly researched and documented tradition, an inner tradition that really incorporates all of these elements of magic, astrology, alchemy, and the related hermetic arts into one complete system that follows the outline of the Kratopoeia, which, of course, is 100 years earlier than the Golden Dawn Cipher manuscript and earlier than the OTO, and was very, very influential on European magical traditions. And so the Kratopoeia is our initiatory system. Now, one of the things that I should point out about this is that magic has a tremendous power, and it also has a very deep and profound philosophy behind it. Now, if you recall our show a few weeks ago on remote viewing and lucid dreaming, now one of the things that the remote viewers established, and they established it at a considerable taxpayer expense. Taxpayers spent a lot of money to get this established, but I am very glad they did, because what the remote viewers established, both in the United States and in Russia, is that the human mind, the human consciousness, really is the center of a universal matrix. And once you understand the techniques and have the, you can go from the center of your mind anywhere in the universe, and using these techniques, you can get actual, not just your imagination, but actual information back. Now, this is virtually proved. I mean, and I know that this sounds like an awesome thing. I mean, this sounds even more bizarre than that movie, The Matrix, where, you know, you remember that one, where we were all supposed to be simulations of some computer, and actually we were all prisoners. We were all prisoners in some gigantic storage bin, and all the lives we were living were just simulations on a computer. Actually, the truth of the Matrix is more bizarre than that, unless you have been through the whole process of Hermetic Enlightenment. If you have been, I can find a passage. I don't have it right at hand right now, but I can find a passage from the Corpus Hermeticum in which Hermes Trismegistus, 2,000 years ago, described the Matrix exactly as the remote viewers are describing it. So we really do have it. We have this wonderful capability and this great secret, and we've had it for the past 2,000 years. And when you realize that, you realize that magic is not some fuddy-duddy, silly denial of reality or anything like that. Magic is a supreme art science. It's a supreme philosophy. It's the ultimate adventure. So I believe that we should really, really take it seriously, and yet at the same time, we want to realize that it's also fun, and we don't want to take ourselves too seriously. Let's take magic seriously, but let's keep our sense of humor. And as I jokingly said one time, when one of my magical colleagues got a little bit too egotistical, I said, you know, I said that true enlightenment, and it comes when you are able to transcend self-deification. But then I can remember a time when somebody said just about the same thing to me. So magic is, as I said, the great adventure. I'd like you to join us and participate in it. So write me a letter and tell me why you want to join, and here's what you do. You send your letter to the Church of the Hermetic Sciences, Post Office Box
403 Silverado, California, 92676. And you can also send it to email to hermetics, that's H-E-R-M-E-T-I-C-S, at SoCal, S-O-C-A-L, .rr.com. That's email. Or surface mail to me directly. That's Pope Runyon, Church of the Hermetic Sciences, P.O. Box 403, Silverado, California, 92676, or hermetics at socal.rr.com. That's email. Now, when we get that letter, if you send us a nice letter, we'll send you out an application. And you can send it back and we'll get you signed up and you get that first lesson. And I'll bet you'll have that test back to us pretty quick, too. And we'll be off and running, and we're going to have a lot of good things in store for you. So until next week, and next week let's have some call-ins. Let's talk about the pentagram ritual and you want to argue about blue and green pentagrams, we can do that too. I don't mind if you make them blue, but yeah, it's going to confuse you later on when you start doing water pentagrams. Anyway, just remember, we are really going ahead with this associate member program. We want to get you on board, and we're still going to be running the radio show. Oh, yeah, we'll be out here and we'll be teaching you things on the radio and exchanging ideas with you and all that on the subject. But I'm encouraging you to get with us. So until next week, we'll have a new topic for you. I'll get that out. I'll get out in the abstract pretty shortly. Until next week. Have a very, very good holiday season, and we'll see you next week, and have a good one, and good magic.